It's time for another episode of Just a Bit Outside with your hosts, Stark and Massaro.
Way back, Blue Jays win it! Touch the ball, Joe! Brett Favre! Touchdown, Green Bay! Bless you, boys! What a game!
We are live! We have Mike back, and I can tell he is ready to roll with his sports hot takes. And he's got a ton of them because we have lots of great sports to discuss, including the Oilers struggle while the Lightning have life. Golden State is in a battle with Boston. Billy Horschel picks up a big win at the Memorial. The Jays have a strong homestand, and the LIV Golf League is ready for its first event. But first, Mike, how was your week, and how was your week off of the show?
Gotta tell you, man, you don't need me.
Thank
One
you.
Man army. Good job. I like how I like how you preface the late night show, and when I listen to it, that's what it sounded like. But we don't have a call line, so I guess we couldn't.
I know we need. I had a couple people reach out and say, "Oh, if only I could call in, I would have called in." And then, you know, they would have given some bad sports take and I could just yell at them and say, you're wrong. I think that's how those late night shows go.
Yeah, for sure. But no, good job and good to be back. You know, a lot of sport watching on my end, a lot of the golf, women's U.S. Open, I was watching a lot of this past week. But in a non-sports related chatter, I finished, I don't know if this is your thing, but I finished the new season of Stranger Things. On
Not
Netflix.
My thing, but
Unreal.
Yeah, it's good. I hear it gets a little, it's a little dark now. Like it would start off with kids kind of being in this magical land and now it's like real dark.
Yeah, it's kind of shifted from like your, you know, 70s, 80s sci-fi thing to like a horror. Nothing crazy, but it's been pretty good. So finish that off. I guess there's a couple more episodes coming in July, but...
You have to sleep with the lights on now?
No, I'm okay. Sleep pretty sound. So
okay, good.
Just load up on some bevvies and that always puts you to sleep.
That's awesome. That's a good week. Well, I ventured out to a family reunion barbecue on my wife's side in beautiful Leamington, Ontario. Thank you to Aunt Janet for organizing it. It was a awesome little pool party. Everyone got together. We haven't been able to. We usually get together around Christmas, but the last couple of years, for obvious reasons, haven't been able to. So this was a nice Saturday afternoon into Saturday evening party. We had the kids swimming, going down slides. We had drinks were flowing, nice appies. And then she brought in a stone oven pizza guy. The guy literally came to the house, set up the stone oven right in the driveway, made the pizzas, brought them right out back. It was gourmet. It was awesome. Had a blast. I stayed out of the water. I didn't want to get the dad bod out at the party. Just wasn't comfortable enough yet for that. But we played a lot of outdoor games. I'm not sure what's your choice of barbecue or tailgating games. We did cornhole. Right. And then we played waddies. I'm not sure if you sure know waddies, but it's like you got like a nice big coin or it's a metal circle and you got to try to throw it into these little cups that look like golf holes.
OK. Right?
My brother-in-law makes it. So we had some fun. Gets a little intense, especially after a couple drinks. People start yelling at each other about the rules, but it was good fun to get back out with some family and have some fun in a normal little Saturday barbecue.
There's a couple other. Yeah. Cornhole is you know,
staple.
What
goes on at the Green Bay Packers tailgates when you're there?
What doesn't go on at the Green Bay Packers? It depends, man. I usually go in the winter, so there's not much cornhole being played in December. But, you know, a couple other I like being Italian bocce ball. I mean, every Italian household is just a bocce ball, so I have that. There's another game. I don't know what the name of it is, but you may have played it. Basically, it looks like, you know, like the white PVC piping, and you make like two or three kind of levels, two golf balls with a string, and you flick it and try and get them. It's like 3 points
wrap
on top,
around.
Second.
Yep.
I don't know what the what it's
I
called.
I don't know what it's called either, but That's I know the exact game you're talking about. Yeah. Anyone out there listening, if you know that game, tweet at us. Let us know. So that was fun. That is a good game. I want to show you this, Mike. I know this is an audio podcast, but if you can see... I'm wearing
Very nice.
Just a Bit Outside t-shirt. I'm giving a shout out to my buddy Kevin Stead, who made this awesome shirt for me. So now my face is officially on a shirt. I appreciate that. I'll be wearing it with pride, promoting the show. So that was awesome. Thank you, Kevin. I really do appreciate it. Mike, the other thing I watched last week, which was weird. I don't know why I did it, but I saw it was on. I recorded it, and then I ended up watching it later on in the night, was the match.
Mm.
So they had this golf match, you know, I think it's like the sixth or seventh version of it. We had the Tiger Phil, and then we had, you know, we had Bryson in there. We had Brady. We had a whole bunch of different things in it. So now it's just straight NFL quarterbacks. You had Tom Brady and Aaron Rodgers versus Josh Allen and Patrick Mahomes. They played 12 holes, beautiful golf course right in the heart of Las Vegas. It's the Wynn golf course. They have hotels, casinos all around it. I can just imagine the type of guys that get out on this golf course on a regular day in Vegas, you know, finally seeing the sunlight after being in the poker room or the slot room for 24 hours, and they try to play a little bit of golf. They probably gamble their ass off on that as well. But they do a lot of cool things with this match, and I like it. It shows the personality of the players, and these four guys, you know, they're stars. Let's be honest. Everyone knows who they really are, and they really got to show themselves on the golf course. They're not the greatest golfers. They have cameras in their carts. I thought that was the best thing because it allowed you to see them talk in between shots, and then also allow the host to interview them, and you can hear them going back and forth with each other. It was kind of cool. Of course, Charles Barkley stole the show again. Him and J.J. Watt, who was also kind of on the panel, they were going back and forth, and it was joking at first, but then it kind of almost sounded serious. Like, J.J. Watt was taking some hard shots at Charles there, and he was kind of getting back at him. Patrick Mahomes, definitely a groundskeeper's nightmare. He takes his practice swings, like massive chunks out of the ground on a practice swing, and then he steps up and swing. Like, I was like, oh, like anyone who's a 10 handicap or under knows that's a no-no. You don't cut up the ground on your practice swing, but he was doing it like crazy. And then your boy, Aaron Rodgers, nails a birdie putt on the last hole to win it. It was right down to the wire. It was an exciting end. Pretty cool. I like these events. They keep them short, only 12 holes. It's good content, lots of banter. I want to see more of them. I'll watch anything golf, really, so put it out there. Allow them to swear. Let them have drinks. Patrick Mahomes was smashing Coors Lights while he was on the cart. I thought it was pretty well done, and you know, a quick little two-hour round was cool.
Hopefully it's a sign of things to come. Rodgers on the final hole, maybe the Super Bowl.
Yep.
I don't know.
Yep. That's some foreshadowing. We got a little bit of Green Bay Packers talk for you later on. But hey, we got our T5 coming up right after the break, so stick around. We'll be right back. After the hype of the Battle of Alberta was a letdown, the hype of the McDavid versus MacKinnon series has not matched what we expected, and the NHL Conference Finals will be our T1. Edmonton is down 3-0 as the Avalanche look to punch their ticket to the Stanley Cup Finals. Well, in the East, the Lightning scored on an Andre Palat one-timer with less than a minute left in Game 3 on home ice to win their first game of the series. Mike, does McDavid have any more magic left in him to bring his Oilers back into this series?
I don't think so. I think they've met their match here. You know, Colorado is just a deeper team. They're playing, it seems like, at a different speed. Edmonton's having issues with a lot of turnovers. And it just seems like they've kind of met their match. You know, the end of the road might be here for them. Mike Smith's play has fallen off as the playoffs has kind of went on.
Yeah.
And that has affected them. But I mean, you know, guys like Kale McCarr, MacKinnon, they pretty much shut down McDavid for the most part through three games. And I think this one's over.
Yeah, I think Edmonton, or let's say, I think McDavid has taken this team as far as he possibly can. He's got 2 goals in the series, 3 games. Draisaitl, no goals this series. I know Draisaitl was lighting it up in the last one against Calgary, so a bit of a disappointment for him to take a step back. You mentioned it. Makar, for me, has kind of been the star for Colorado. I mean, he's an offensive threat all the time, but he's been helping shut down these top guys with Edmonton. Saw a great highlight. You know, this is for someone who's really into hockey, he's going to like this, but we know McDavid's the fastest guy in the ice. No questions about it. And he was busting down the wing, and Makar with the backwards crossovers able to keep up with McDavid. It's a thing of beauty. It was unbelievable to see. And obviously keeping McDavid the outside doesn't get the opportunity to cut in like he usually does. Oilers don't have the skill to match Colorado. Mike Smith, you mentioned in the back end, he's letting goals in all over the place. You got 16 goals in three games for the Avs. Nisushkin, he's got four in the playoffs. Well, Rantanen's finding the back of the net as well. It's not just McKinnon. And I think Nathan said that when he did the interview prior to the series that, hey, this isn't McDavid versus McKinnon. You know, you can put that out there as the lead thing, but it's the Avalanche against the Oilers. And I think, speaking from Nathan MacKinnon, I think that we're a better overall team. And he's right, because MacKinnon hasn't been lighting it up. The rest of the team's kind of been building around him. So as the Oilers try to shut down MacKinnon, that MacKinnon line, the refs have really stepped up. Now, game three, we know that Evander Kane had that bad, bad hit on Kadri. I think it just came out he might have broke his thumb, at least, if not hurt his shoulder. We teach kids at a very young age, once you see those numbers, you cannot hit them, let alone cross-check them 3 feet from the boards. I get it. Kadri's a pain in the ass, a pest, and, you know, he's a tough guy to play against, but Kane's got to know better than to hit him like that. It cost his team a 5-minute major. They lose that game. Now he's going to have a 1-game suspension, missing game four, which is being played tonight, Monday night. And Kadri, you know, they knew he was done because the coach came out right away and said he's out for the series. He's probably done for the rest of the playoffs because there was something broken from that.
Yeah, weren't they up 1-0 at that point too?
Yeah, they had the lead. Total, it was early in the game. Yeah,
total momentum killer. What momentum they had in that game. Yeah, like I said, you know, you've kind of hit it home. I just think that this series is over.
Colorado's clearly the better team, and they're proving it.
Yeah.
And now you're going to see, I mean, you know, game four here with Edmonton tonight, they're going to try to play that run and gun style, hammer the over tonight, if you can jump back and pass it while you're listening to this. But the Oilers are going to try to play a run and gun style because that's the only way they can win. They know it's the only way they can win. I mean, if they're lucky to get one here, they got to go back to Colorado for a game five. I just don't see them extending this series past five games. But in the East, Mike, the Rangers shocking the Tampa Bay Lightning by winning the first two games on home ice, coming into game three in Tampa, still looking like the team to beat. The Rangers really had a chance to pull away here and get their own 3-0 lead on the series. The game is tied. It looks like it's going to be going to overtime. If New York can just find a way to get a lucky bounce in OT, that series is 3-over, probably over. But Kucherov, nice little sneaky back behind his back pass over to Palat for the one-timer in to win the game with less than 42 seconds left. It was late enough in the game where when it's less than that last minute, you're almost already, as a fan or a player, you almost are already starting to think about overtime. So if you're a fan, you're like, you know what? Maybe I'll go get a beer and the pizza, go to the washroom, get back here just in time for the overtime. The players are thinking, I'm going to tape my stick. Maybe I get my skate sharpened. Then boom, back of the net, game over, just like that, 2-1 with another game in Tampa.
Rangers go up 2-0, and that was the first time Tampa lost consecutive games in 3 years on this run they've been on in the playoffs, which is, you know, pretty impressive. And you look at the Rangers in the first two rounds, they were down 3-1 to Pittsburgh, down 3-2 to Carolina. So they're kind of doing the opposite here. Almost got up. They're up 2-0 in game three and allowed Tampa back into it. So maybe the break, the lengthy break for Tampa.
9 days.
Yeah. Just kind of hurt their momentum a bit, but you can never count them out. And, big win at home to cut the series at 2-1. Now we'll see what happens if they can grab another one here. You know, I think if the Rangers can win game four and go back to the Garden, you know, it might be tough for them. But who knows? Whatever goalie kind of gets hot here, I think is going to dictate where the series goes from here on.
Yeah, the Rangers stars, for the most part, have showed up. Right. Zibanejad and Kreider, they have been lights out this playoffs, 10 goals each. But if the Rangers really want to pull away with this series. You mentioned game four to get that 3-1 lead going back to Madison Square Garden. They need a guy like Panarin to step up and maybe have a 2-goal game and get them a win. But I really think Tampa now, they got that taste. They got the blood in the water on that win in game three. They're going to blow it out in game four, tie this series at 2-2. You got a best 2 out of 3 with 2 of the games being in New York. It's going to be a great finish, and hopefully is for hockey fans, because the West, as we mentioned, looks like it's done.
Yeah, I just think that the 2-0 lead in game three, allowing Tampa in to win it, especially win it the way they did, you know, you preface, your mind kind of wanders towards overtime and boom, they hit the dagger. That could be a big momentum swing.
Yeah. And last thing on the NHL, they're starting to sprinkle out award winners right now and more coming out. The Jack Adams for Coach of the Year goes to Daryl Sutter with Calgary, an old guy who it didn't even really sound like he wanted to win it, to be honest, was kind of hoping someone else might get it, but he's probably back working at the farm already. So good for him to get that win. They brought him in a couple years ago. He was able to get the team dialed in the regular season this year. Who knows what's going to happen with the Flames moving forward as Johnny Gaudreau, free agent, Matthew Tkachuk, restricted free agent. So they got to make some moves here and some decisions will be interesting. And then the Selkies for the best defensive forward, kind of, is what they call it, went to Patrice Bergeron. His 5th time winning, could be his last, as there's rumors of a possible retirement on his end, but good for him to get that award.
I thought Jerry Gallant was going to win the Jack Adams.
Could have been, yeah.
You know, with the Rangers. I not taking nothing away from Daryl Sutter. He did a hell of a job with that team this year.
Yeah. Now, the NBA knows how to throw a party. And on their biggest stage with 2 of the biggest teams in the league, the NBA Finals have not disappointed, and that will be our T2. The Celtics came out firing in Game 1 after a bad start. They worked their way to a 17-0 run late in the fourth quarter to secure the Game 1 win. But Curry and the boys would not let it happen again, stomping on Boston in Game 2 to tie the series. Mike, can the Celtics keep up with the Warriors back home in Boston?
Man, I'm telling you, this is the first 2 games were all about momentum swings. You know, and you touched on it. Boston, 48-18 run in the second half of the game 1, 40 points in the fourth quarter, trailed by 15 in the third and had a massive turnaround to win. There were some similarities heading into game 2, and then Golden State goes on a big run. And punish Boston for their turnovers with a big third quarter to eventually take game 2. So it's been really interesting to see how things have shifted over the first 2 games. And, you know, I think this was going to go, it definitely has all the ingredients to go 7 games, just given how things played out. Boston dominates the latter part of game 1. Golden State responds in game 2. So we got a hell of a series ahead of us.
Yeah, and in basketball, more than any other sport, I feel like closing is really important. Like, yeah, obviously it takes a lot to get to that point and to have the chance to win at the end. But when the game's on the line late in the fourth, that's when things matter the most. In game 1, the Warriors just couldn't handle the pressure, and they were missing open threes and shots from the key, which were double bouncing on the rim and just wouldn't go in. And they kind of looked like they had this, oh my God, why is this not going in for us now in this last, you know, 3 minutes of the game? Boston just kept that pressure, and they were able to just hit those shots. So Celtics hitting the shots, Warriors missing. Celtics right back down, hitting those shots that were so important. The Warriors just could not score the last 2 minutes of the game, and that was the difference. That's all it came down to. That 17-0 run for the Celtics gets them a game, gets them game 1 on the road in Golden State is massive, because now they just take control of the series. It was a huge shock for them. Boston, they had that tough Eastern Conference final, and then they go all the way west to play Golden State. I thought for sure the Warriors were going to at least get game 1. If anything, Boston would get game 2, but it might be a small blip for the Warriors. They were knocking down the shots come the second game because they knew this one they had to win. And it was a veteran Warrior team that showed up in game 2. They knew it was must win on home court. They battled to the very end. And this time they stomped down on them in the fourth quarter to make sure they got that win.
Thing with Boston, though, I mean, you know, you think about even before the Eastern Final against Miami, they had a hell of a time with Milwaukee in the second round. You know, that was a tough series as well.
Yeah.
And Monday, or game one, sorry, 21 three-pointers they hit. That's a fourth time in this playoffs they've hit 20 or more threes in a game. That just shows, like, you know, I think we all know what Golden State's capable of, but Boston, I mean, they're just, if they can go off, they could go off. That's why I think, you know, just given the way the first two games have gone, I think this is going seven. And it'll be seven great games.
Oh, yeah. But I think it's going to be more of the same. So, like, game two, you had Curry. He had 29 points, five three-pointers. And then you get a guy like Jordan Poole, who's kind of that fourth or fifth guy on the starters for Golden State. He had a great game, 17 points, five of his own three-pointers, which was kind of the difference. He really took over when, you know, Draymond kind of got himself in some foul trouble, some questionable calls in game two, didn't quite go the Boston way that maybe should have. And the Warriors, the rest of the team really stepped up, and that's what makes them so good. You think about those teams in the, you know, 2017-18, Kevin Durant losing to the Raptors in 2019. It was kind of like a four-headed monster that they had. Now they only got three of them, a little bit older. Draymond's a little bit slower. So if Klay Thompson ain't hitting like it normally is, you got Poole that can step in. You got Andrew Wiggins that's going to get you 10 to 15 points as well. And that might be the difference for the Warriors. Now it's going to be big going to game three, because you know why? They're in Boston. And Boston is a tough place to play, especially if it's a finals, and they're going to be rowdy, and they're going to be all over Draymond Green. They're going to be all over those Warriors players, just chirping them. It's going to be loud in there. It's going to be those first, you know, 5 to 10 minutes of game three. It's going to be all Celtics.
So what's your prediction here? I mean, we're going to be talking about this next week too, because game five is a week Monday. So
I still think the Warriors have enough to get it done. I do agree with you. It's going to be a longer series. I think Boston's going to win one of these two games in Boston. So then it just comes down to a two of three to finish it out. I do think Golden State will be the team to win.
I'm going to go Celtics in seven.
Ooh, I got an interesting one for you, though. I saw that win in game two, Curry, Thompson, and Green. As a threesome, they now have won 18 finals games together. Finals, not playoffs, finals. That's 18 crazy. Together. They're one away from Duncan, Parker, and Ginobili, who sit at 19. So if Golden State can get the win in the series, they'll pass them, be the winningest threesome in NBA finals history. Golf is a unique game where you need different aspects of the game to all come together at the same time in order to win. And Billy Horschel did just that this weekend, and that will be our T3. Jack's tournament, the Memorial, was held this weekend in Dublin, Ohio, and it was the boy from Florida who took home the win, as Billy Horschel won by four strokes over Aaron Wise. Mike, was Horschel even on your radar for this tournament?
Nope. It's a good thing we didn't do the golf picks last week.
Yep.
All strategy, my friend.
Yep.
No, I mean, you know, a good performance by him, had a 5-shot lead going into Sunday. Sunday was a tough outing for everybody. I think nobody scored better than 69, which just shows how difficult it was on Sunday. But, you know, he has a 5-shot lead. It drops to 2. And I know we'll touch on the eagle putt, but I think equally as important, and Jack Nicklaus touched on this in his post-game remarks, his par putts on 13 and 14 were probably equal as important to his victory than hitting a 55-foot eagle putt on 15. That obviously, you know, secured things, I guess you could say. But on a tough day to hit, you know, difficult par putts to keep things going, and then you get that nice eagle, I think that was crucial for Horschel. And, you know, that kind of steadied the waters, and then he hits the eagle on 15, and that was all she wrote.
Yeah, I mean, the saying is drive for show, putt for dough, and that's exactly what Billy did here.
I can't do either.
No, most people can't. He had two really bad tee shots on the back nine on Sunday. One was going way left, and one was kind of like a dribbler down the fairway that he let go of his club even. He didn't think it was going to be good, but it didn't matter because he was putting lights out. I don't think he had a three putt. He legged everything nice and close for tap-ins. You mentioned on 15, the 55-foot eagle putt. That sealed it. He fist bumped it. He knew it was over at that point. He kind of just kept his head down the whole way, grinded it out right to the win. He had known there had been times in the past where maybe he hadn't closed the lead. He knew this was a big lead, something that he needed to win to kind of get moving and get his momentum going the right direction, because he's played some decent golf. And, you know, when you're looking back the last 2 weeks, the winners have been people that were seven shots back on Sunday. So in the back of Billy's mind, he's got to be like, five's nothing. I need to stay on this, because at any time, it could slip away, either a mess up for me or someone behind me that's making a lot of putts and kind of catching me, which would be a problem. So he grinded his way, played his game. He knew, get it on the green, two putts for pars, take your birdies when you can get them, and it seemed to help him out.
Yeah, to that point, I was looking at Cam Smith Saturday night, who at that point, you know, was just behind him. I think it was 13 and 8 under or something like that, 4 or 5 shot difference. And, you know, Cam Smith had the lead after Friday. So I thought, you know what, does he have a chance here? Because Horschel, I think it was, 5 shots. So I was considering putting something on Cam Smith. I'm glad I didn't, because he came out and shot 77 on Sunday and was nowhere to be found. So, yeah, history of the last couple of weeks did not repeat itself this weekend.
Yeah, and Horschel's he's a good guy to follow. I mean, there's lots of people think he's a little nuts and does things a little bit different than others. And he's kind of past that young group of American golfers, and he's in that middle range of in his 30s now and really needs to grind it out to make everything count. And this win will help him out a lot. Now, after missing the cut at the Charles Schwab, which was his first missed cut in a full year since the U.S. Open at Torrey Pines, he held a meeting with his team, said, we need to pull it together. We need to start finishing tournaments the proper way and focus on his process, which is a little bit slow. It's tough to watch. But hey, if it's working, you got to stick to it. Don't matter what anyone else is saying. And it paid off. He's weird to watch with his putting, but something that Faldo said stuck with me. He said, you got to keep the body moving right up to the moment you putt, and it's been working for him, so why change it? Now, he's got himself on the radar for the President's Cup coming in September here. He needs to be included with some of the names for the President's Cup, because that Ryder Cup team of the U.S., those are all young guys. They're all going to be right there knocking on the door as well. But now Horschel's got his name in the hat. You got Burns, who wasn't on the team. His name's in the hat. You got Homa. You got Zalatoris. You got Cam Young. So there's a lot of guys, Americans, that are now going to be in the mix for the President's Cup to go along with all those guys that were already there. We don't need to talk about the few that have question marks. We'll get to that down the road. But the President's Cup is going to be a stacked American team, and I think Horschel should be one of the guys considered as the President's pick.
Yeah, I mean,
The captain's pick.
I knew what you meant. But I think after this tournament, he's sitting 8th in the standings, and I think it's typically top 10 and 2 captain's picks. Typically, it goes something like that. So, you know, if he finishes the season well, he should be in good standing to make the U.S. team. Just keeping on the, do you want to touch more on the Presidents, or do we want to talk U.S. Open?
You know what? I had two things other from this tournament that I just wanted to call out, Mike. Things that happened early in the tournament on Thursday and Friday. First, on Thursday, Hideki Matsuyama, did you see him get disqualified?
No, I didn't.
So it turns out someone took a picture, posted on Instagram, and his 3-wood had these white lines across the sides and up and down on it, and it seemed odd. So they came up to him on, I think he was somewhere near the back end of his round, and they looked at it, and it was almost like whiteout marker on the club.
Okay.
So it was a foreign substance on his club, and he was disqualified. Turns out that it was someone from his club manufacturer had put it on there so they could test out where the ball was hitting on the club and how it was affecting the ball's travel and spin during the rain session, and they never took it off or switched the club before he went out on the course. Disqualified, felt bad for him, but maybe he'll come up to the Canadian Open. That would be nice now to play, because he's going to have to wait till the U.S. Open. He didn't even get a full tournament in, but that's on the caddy, I think. You got to be looking at the clubs before you put them in the bag. The second thing, on Friday, Jordan Spieth hits an errant tee shot that just drills a fan right in the head. I mean, lucky the guy was he was sitting down, but he went right down, laying down, grabbing his head, and Spieth went over. His ball was now in the rough. He hit his shot, and then he was like, said to the cameraman, like, can you please go away for a second? I need to talk to this guy, because he almost killed the guy. They had to take him out probably on an ambulance. After that, he two-putted that hole for a bogey. His next shot, he shanked out of the fairway as well, and he bogeyed that hole. That would screw me. I'd be done for the day after almost killing someone.
Yeah, I'm just glad there's no spectators when I'm playing. So
yeah, they stay away from.
I would be a fan favorite, I guess. But Women's U.S. Open, I spent a lot of time watching this tournament on the weekend. Minji Lee of Australia, 1x4, -13. Takes home $1.8 million, the largest prize money in women's tour history. I think it was a $10 million purse, so good to see a good purse for the women. Lee was dominant all week, 67, 66, 67, and a 71 even par on Sunday. I don't think she was ever below three-shot lead. She was just kind of in control the entire tournament. Aggressive, played really well. Her second major of her career, won the Evian Championship last year. Now she's going to chase Kari Webb, fellow Aussie. Kari Webb had seven majors and the last Aussie to win the U.S. Open, women's U.S. Open back in 01. So in good company there, just a dominant performance and a well-deserved title for Lee.
Yeah, and these tournaments are obviously planned well in advance, and you can see where the women's golf game took a big turn, call it 6, 7, 8 years ago, and became a top event, this U.S. Open, because this tournament was held at Southern Pines in North Carolina. Great track, close to Pinehurst. People rave about this course. And then their next few U.S. Opens, they got Pebble Beach, Erin Hills, Riviera, all world-class courses. And that's great to see the women's game getting to some of these awesome events, great locations, and only make for better tournaments and better golf. The Red Hot Blue Jays won 8 in a row before falling to the Minnesota Twins on Friday and now put themselves back in a good spot in the AL East, and that will be our T4. Sweeping the Chicago White Sox at home, had the team on an ultimate high before losing 2 of 3 to the AL Central leading Twins. Mike, now that the Jays are 7.5 back of the Yankees, can you see them making a run before the All-Star break?
Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, we didn't touch on this a lot, or, you know, you and I didn't talk a lot last week with my absence, but I think it all started to not so much click, but really come around the offense over the past, you know, 2 weeks here. And we saw it through the White Sox series, even against, you know, the Twins, despite the fact that they lost 2 of 3. But I think a lot of the concerns we had are starting to be erased. The bats are starting to warm up. You know, the pitching has held consistent. And I know you were touching on him last week. Barrios had a hell of an outing on Saturday. So it's good to see. You know, you got three guys that are now over 50 hits. Vladdy's right there as well. Chapman's average has come up. There's a lot of positives and a lot of good progress on the offense. And I think we're starting to see what we expect from the Jays offensively.
Right. Yeah. And it really started in that White Sox series, sweeping them with the bats. 21 runs in 3 games, home runs all over the place, extra base hits, which kept the order kind of rolling through. Everyone was getting a turn to bat. It's a perfect way to start a homestand when you get back. Just everyone gets up there. It's like Little League, right?
Yeah.
Ryu, 4 innings on Wednesday before leaving with forearm tightness. It's a little bit worrisome, but maybe, you know, he's the type of guy that needs some time off to figure things out. Stripling stepped in to finish that game off, and he could be an option to spot start. I think he's going to start tonight. This is Monday night against the Kansas City Royals with Ryu being out. Maybe we see Pearson at some point get the call up and give him a start. That would be interesting. They got some options. Now, Thursday's game, it was a gem by Manoah. 7 2/3 innings, 6 hits only, 1 walk, 5 strikeouts. Manoah is now serious Cy Young discussion. He's 6-1 on the year, a 1.98 ERA, fifth best in MLB. He's pitching great. The players trust him. He's got good defense behind there. High energy, kind of reminds me of a Marcus Stroman, where all the guys were kind of rallying behind him because there's so much energy when he's out on the mound. He's been a nice little surprise to the team this year. year, and they had him slotted maybe in that third spot in their rotation, but he's moving right up now, and that's good because you see Ryu taking a step back. Kikuchi, he's stepping back. So I like Manoah's pitching. It's helping, but it's really the bats that were key to that series.
Alejandro Kirk, 4 home runs in his past 5 games.
Yeah, little guy, getting it done.
And the other one, George Springer, this stat I had read, and I found it really interesting. With his first inning home run on Sunday, he now has 7 first inning home runs this season, which breaks Blue Jays legend Devon White's record of 6 back in 91. So, he's been really hot, Springer, as of late, and has been a big part of the offensive awakening, I guess we could say.
Yeah, I noticed that too. I think about it. The Jays had 2 of the greatest leadoff hitters in the sport, Devon White and Ricky Henderson, on the same team. Ricky Henderson had to bat 2nd. I think he holds the record for most leadoff home runs in MLB history, but great for Springer, and he really showed it against that Twins. The Twins are a good ball club here. Let's not forget that, losing 2-3 to them isn't that bad. They find ways to win. Nothing flashy with them, right? They're kind of a grind it out, get the base hits, move the runners along. Friday was obviously a little bit disappointing with the streak ending there. It was kind of a butt kicking 9-3. The Jays only had 4 hits while giving up 12. Kikuchi, he's been decent this year, Mike, but by no means is he one of the guys that's going to turn around and be a stud for them, and that's why they need Ryu to pitch really well. He allowed 7 hits in just 4 2/3 innings in that one, and to get the win on Saturday was good, but Sunday, obviously disappointing. It's tough when you're giving up runs in the early innings and you're playing catch-up, but lots for the Jays to come up with here. It's time for them to start firing. They got 3 in Kansas City, 3 in Detroit, 2 of the bottom teams in the Central, followed by coming back home to play Baltimore. We know how bad they are. And then it's the showdown. We got the Yankees, Father's Day weekend in Toronto. That's a big series. Need to win that series and possibly look for a sweep in order to catch these Yankees and get a little bit closer before the second half starts in about a month.
Yeah, no, I think Kikuchi has been a nice surprise as your 4th starter. And, we've talked about him, and he had a hell of a gauntlet of teams. He pitched against the Yankees a couple times, Boston a couple times at the start of the year. He's brought his ERA down. He's at 3.91 going into this week, 50 strikeouts. So as your 4th guy, that's pretty good. I think he's done a great job this season and has been a little bit more consistent lately. But, to your point, the next 10 games, your playing teams are well below you. If they could keep this little streak rolling here and come in firing on all cylinders later this week against the Yankees, or next week, sorry, against the Yankees, great.
Announcements this week of who would play in the first ever LIV golf event, Rock the Golf World, and that will be our T5. The biggest name that was announced to play in the first ever event in London, England this week was Dustin Johnson, who currently sits 13th in the world rankings. Other big names included Louis Oosthuizen, Kevin Na, Taylor Gooch, and Sergio Garcia. Mike, was this the right decision by these guys to move away from the PGA Tour?
I guess time will tell. We talked about this previously. A lot of the older European guys, maybe the guys that aren't competing as much on the PGA Tour, for them it's another good payday, right? And maybe the schedule is a little bit better for themselves. They're scheduled to play 8 series, 8 tournaments this year. Where it goes from there, I guess we'll see. But there's a lot of money involved for these guys. So I don't know. It's hard to answer that question without knowing what the ramifications are going to be from the PGA Tour. The commissioner, Jay Monahan, has said in the past that players who compete in rival leagues could face fines, suspensions, perhaps a lifetime ban. So now that we are here, week 1, the first tournament, maybe now we'll see what those ramifications are going to be. Kevin Na resigned from the PGA Tour last week to avoid any potential suspensions or anything of that nature. What does this do for the major tournaments? The majors are all organized by their own governing bodies, the Masters by Augusta National, the U.S. Open by the U.S. Golf Association, the Open Championship by Royal and Ancient, and the PGA by the PGA of America. So what does that do? What happens with the President's Cup, with the Ryder Cup? So until we have an idea of what the ramifications are going to be from the majors, from the President's Cup, from the Ryder Cup, and how things affect their status on the PGA Tour, it's kind of hard to really sink our teeth into what it is.
Yeah, and it sounds like they won't make any announcement on any sort of punishment, if we're going to call it that, until the first balls are hit by these players to confirm that they're actually in these events. So we should find out more by the weekend as to what's going to happen to these guys. But I want to start with Dustin Johnson. He's made $70 million in his career. He's only made $1.5 million this year. Now, granted, he hasn't played a ton, and when he hasn't won anything just yet. He's got a green jacket. He's got a U.S. Open win. If they're offering him $125 million to come and play for a year, that's tough to turn down. Even if he is suspended from the tour for 1 year, let's say, he makes more money than he was ever going to make, plus bonus money, plus prize money at these events, and he can still play in the Masters and U.S. Open as a past champion. Then when the LIV folds in, let's say, 2 or 3 years because they run out of money or don't have enough eyeballs on it, maybe he sits out and then he comes back to go get his tour card. He's in his 40s at that point and he can play a little bit and say, hey, you know what? I banked that cash when I needed to. As much as people say it's bad money, it's a lot of money for someone to turn down. It's life-changing money for you and your family. He has played in these Saudi events before, but now he's going to be the face of the tour. That might be a lot of pressure on him, but he seems to be a guy that doesn't let anything get to him and doesn't let anyone bother him by what they say about him. He's just going to go about his own thing and do it his own way. Now, the only real shitty thing is how he handled the RBC sponsorship and dropping out of this week, which is their kind of flagship event in the Canadian Open. You know, DJ is kind of a pseudo-Canadian by connection to Wayne Gretzky, his father-in-law, and now it doesn't look like he'll ever come back to the Canadian Open as RBC has dropped him as a sponsor. So that's a bad look for him. But it's tough. It must have been a real tough decision for all of these guys to turn down that money. But you mentioned with Kevin Na saying, I'm just going to resign from the PGA Tour. He knows he can't make that money or compete anymore in the PGA Tour. It's a young man's game. It's the guys from 22 to 30 that are bombing the ball, that are in great shape, that can play every week on the PGA Tour that are going to win. A guy like Kevin Na can't do that anymore. He's got to pick and choose which events he goes in and try to get his points and get his money when he can, where this is guaranteed. So it's tough for these people to say, oh, you can't be doing this, because it's money that's right there for them.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see, you know, just from a broadcasting perspective. They announced that the first tournament this week in London is going to be on Facebook, YouTube, and their golf website. So no, you know, no streaming service, I guess, per se, aside from the online properties we talked about. But be interesting to see, you know, kind of what the viewership is, if they can measure that and how that comes about. I think some people, you know, I'll probably take a look and see what's going on. Yep. and how it looks. But
it'll be interesting if the Golf Channel shows highlights, or SportsCenter, you know, TSN, ESPN, SportsCenter, whatever it is, will they show highlights of these? You got to think they're going to. They might not lead with it, but it's going to be talked about. You got Dustin Johnson, and now we just got word that Phil Mickelson's going to be in the tournament, possibly Ricky Fowler. The thing that's going to be the big difference here is at this LIV tournament, if it's close on Sunday and you got Dustin Johnson against a Ricky Fowler or a Phil Mickelson going head-to-head, people are going to watch that. On the other end, the Canadian Open, it might be perfect timing for them to go against them. They got a lot of big names coming up to Toronto to compete against this LIV event. You got Justin Thomas, Rory McIlroy, Scottie Scheffler, Cam Smith, all these guys that won majors. They won the Players. They've got past winners. So they got big names coming up here. What the Canadian Open needs and the PGA Tour needs is for Sunday to be a stacked leaderboard with all these big names, and who knows going to win it, because that's going to get eyeballs and no one's going to be watching those LIV events.
Now, for the LIV tournament, it's 3 rounds. Have they specified, are they starting on Thursdays or Friday? Because if they're starting Thursday, we don't need to worry about Sunday.
I don't know the answer to that. That's a good question. The other thing they're doing, Mike, shotgun starts. Yeah,
shotgun team events. So it's like four teams of, or 12 teams of four.
See that, but that interests me. That interests me. I want to know who, what are the teams and who are they? Who are they? How did they pick them? Was there a captain? That type of stuff interests me. And I think, you know, we've talked about this before with the XFL, right? Where the NFL had to incorporate some of the things that they did that were pretty cool. Maybe the PGA Tour can find a way to get team golf events into their tour, because I think that would be cool.
Yeah, I mean, the standalone team events, your Ryder Cup, President's Cup, which alternate years, are fantastic in and of themselves. The match play, I think, a lot, you know, is a lot more exciting. The doubles match play, that is. But yeah, there may be something there.
F1 does it. F1's an individual sport, but there's some team aspects to it. There's a way to figure it out.
Yeah, there. I think there is room for that somehow. As long as it's not, I don't want to see like a season-long thing. I think it may take away from it a bit, but if there's like certain events, maybe like five or six events that count towards this team thing, and I don't know, there's ways of doing it that people can figure out. But, you know, hopefully it doesn't dominate the chatter this week at the Canadian Open. I'd like to think once they tee up on Thursday, the focus will be on the tournament itself. You know, the first time it's back since 2019. Thanks to COVID. So Rory McIlroy is going to defend his title. We're at St. George, different course, good purse, and lots of good names.
Yeah, for sure. And that brings us right into our golf picks. Now, with the week off for Mike, I'm still leading 95-64 going into the Canadian Open. But I did give you guys some fun picks last week. So let's follow up and see how they did. I took Patrick Cantlay, T3. I took Max Homa, T5. I took Rory McIlroy, T18. Wow, that would have got me a lot of points this week, Mike. But it didn't count. That was just for fun. And this week, we do head to St. George's for the Canadian Open. First time back in Canada since 2019 when Rory won it in Hamilton. We're going to do a five-pack of picks because it is our national event. But one caveat, Mike, one of your picks has to be a Canadian. The other four can be from anywhere else in the world, okay? And having said that, I think it's my turn to pick first. Is that correct?
Correct.
Well, I'm going to go with the number one player in the world. I'll go with Scottie Scheffler.
How dare you? It's my guy.
I know.
I'm going to go with another one of my guys, Cam Smith.
You like him a lot, eh? You think I do. You can pull it off up here?
I do. I like him. I think he's a good player, and you know, hopefully the fall off Sunday, he got back up. You know, he got up to Canada. He's ready to roll.
Yeah, and I mean, for my picks here, we talked about this. This leaderboard needs to be stacked on Sunday. So I want Scottie Scheffler there. I want Cam Smith there. This name as well. I'm going to go with Justin Thomas with my second pick.
Well, I'm going to go with a guy that's been hot all year, and he's right up there, Sam Burns.
Sammy Burns, love it. I'm going to go with, some people might call him a little bit of a cheater, but I just think he knows how to play the game, and he's going to have a big week up here this week, Patrick Reed.
I'm going to go with Matthew Fitzpatrick.
Oh, the Fitz, man. I like it. I like it. Oh, where to go next? All right, we haven't taken him here. Another guy we want to see on the leaderboard. I'll go with Rory McIlroy.
I'm going to go with a guy who's had some success in the last couple tournaments he's played in. Would like to see him up there more consistently. Tony Finau.
Good one. Yeah, I agree. He kind of pops up every once in a while and then disappears. Okay, my last pick, I need a Canadian. Which way to go? Who's been playing well? I'll go with the guy that got the hole in one last week. I'll go with Adam Hadwin.
I'm going to take Corey Connors. I've taken him in the past. He's, you know, hasn't come through for me, but I like it this week. The Canadian Open. Apparently, he's never played here.
That's the thing. We're going to get to it in our game coming up after the break. But so, a lot of these Canadians have not played here. Tough track to get on. Me personally, I can't even get on there. So, Stark, I got Scottie Scheffler, Justin Thomas, Patrick Reed, Rory McIlroy, and Adam Hadwin. Mike's got Cam Smith, Burns, Fitzpatrick, Finau, and Corey Connors is his Canadian. So let's see who has it better in our next game of higher or lower, which is coming up right after the break. One of our favorite games because it allows us to think like gamblers at the sports book. We'll be playing higher or lower. And Mike, I'll set the line and you tell us which way you are going. So let's play higher or lower. Are you ready?
Let's do it.
Number one, Rafa Nadal won the French Open this week for his record extending 22nd Grand Slam. Now two clear of both Roger Federer and Djokovic. The question is, 1.5 more Grand Slams in Nadal's career.
I'm going with higher. He's already won two this season. He hasn't won Wimbledon in quite a while and U.S. Open a couple years ago. But as long as he's playing at a high level at the age of 36, I think he'll get a couple more before it's all said and done.
Yeah, I know. So he's got 14 French Open majors of his 22, 14 of them at the one event. He's only won the Aussie. He only won the Aussie Open this year because Djokovic did not play. He usually dominates that tournament. His last U.S. Open win in 2019. He hasn't won Wimbledon since 2010. I'm going lower on this one. I don't think he'll play Wimbledon this year or ever again. He can't beat the younger players at the U.S. Open on the hard surfaces. That leaves him with the French and Aussie only moving forward. He's got lots of injuries he's still battling with. I can't see him playing much more. He's won a ton of money. He's got all the awards. He's now got the Grand Slam lead. I'm going to go lower. Don't think he gets to two more. Number two. 21 Canadians will participate in their National Open Championship this week at the Canadian Open in St. George's. The highest Canadian will finish 4.5 position. So if you're thinking higher, Mike, you're thinking 4, 3, 2, or 1.
As much as it pains me to say, I have to say lower. We mentioned in our last segment that it's a tough course to get on, and a lot of our Canadian guys may not have had that experience there. I'm saying lower, but I hope I'm wrong.
I'm saying lower as well, and I'm hoping I'm wrong too. The last Canadian to win the Canadian Open was Pat Fletcher in 1954. Well, the last good chance we had at a Canadian winning it was Mike Weir in 2004. He had a 3-shot lead heading into Sunday at Glen Abbey before starting off with a double bogey and falling apart. I do like Connors and Hughes and Hadwin. Those are our three best chances. But this field is just too strong, and I don't think these Canadians really played that course that much. So there's not that home course feel that you might have with some other guys playing at events. So unfortunately, I'm going to go lower on this one. Number three, Yankee slugger Aaron Judge has 21 home runs and is on pace for 65 this year. Let's set the number at 64.5 home runs for Judge this season.
I'm going to go lower. He's on a hell of a pace right now. The Yankees are on a hell of a pace. You have to think eventually they're going to cool down a little bit, and he might too. It wouldn't surprise me if he gets there. I just don't. For this sake, I'm going to say lower.
I'm going to go higher. He is swinging great. The team is pushing for an iconic season. He loves hitting at Yankee Stadium. 12 of his 21 home runs at that park. He'll use that short porch and right to his advantage. And in the hot August months in New York City, that ball is going to be flying. He'll get over 50 home runs before Labor Day, hopefully 30 by the All-Star break. And if he can get pumping, he's going to get to that number, no problem. Baseball needs it. So I'm rooting for higher. Let's see a summer of home runs. Number four, division leaders in MLB are smoking the competition right now as the bottom teams are struggling. MLB teams to win 100-plus games this season, 6.5.
I'm going to say lower. I think we may get 6. I don't think it's going to be higher than 6.5, which would be 7, obviously. So, looking at things right now, teams are really starting to separate themselves. But, you know, some of the other races, like in the West, there you got the Dodgers, the Padres, Giants all in the same. They got to make up games and play each other. You know, Yankees will probably get it. But some of these other divisions are a little tighter. I don't know if we'll have all six division winners at 100. So, could have six. I don't think we're going higher.
Yankees, Twins, Astros, Mets, Dodgers, Padres is six. Throw in the Blue Jays or the Rays, one of those teams from the AL East. So I'll take the higher. The only close division right now is the Central in the NL, where the Brewers and Cardinals are kind of battling it out. Maybe those teams will take a couple off of each other. The Yankees, Twins, Mets, Houston, they've already won their divisions. It's over. Okay, those guys are going to get to it. Baseball is going to let in more teams into the playoffs, but the top teams will still be the ones in the league championships and the World Series. Better teams always rise to the top. I'll take the higher, but due to the amount of bad teams and these teams pouncing on them through those bad months in August and September, it's going to be over. Number five, and number five's got three different ones we're going to dive into because the NFL schedules are out. So our team's win totals, we're going to look into those and figure out if we're going to go higher or lower on these team win totals. And we'll start with your team, Mike, the Green Bay Packers. The number set at 10.5 wins for this season.
Very generous. Higher. I think Green Bay has a decent schedule. You know, Lambeau is a tough place to play. Rodgers is back. Got a good run game. There are some questions on receiver, but I think the defense is going to be vastly improved after a very good season last year. Play in the North, you know, the Vikings, Lions, and sorry, the Bears leave something to be desired. So you like that for at least five or six wins there. And then after that, I think they can easily find five or six wins. So I'm saying higher.
I'm going to say higher too. I believe in Aaron Rodgers now after seeing him make that birdie putt to win that match. The Packers will once again, they're going to win that division. I agree with you. I think it's theirs for sure. They're going to be a top team in the conference going into the playoffs. So over 11 wins is what they need to get to anyway. I think they'll get to it. So I'll take the higher on that one. Number two, the Chicago Bears. My Bears, 6.5 wins.
Bear down, Chicago Bears. I'm going to go lower and I just think that this is a team that is going under a rebuild here. You know, they've offloaded some pieces, Khalil Mack obviously being one of them. New coach has come in, defensive-minded coach. They got to do something to help Justin Fields continue his development. I think the Bears are going to have a lower win total, but I expect them to be a much more competitive group. I think there's going to be a lot closer games this year for the Bears.
Higher, Mike. Higher.
Okay.
You got Texans, Giants, Commanders, Lions, Falcons, Jets, and Lions again. There's seven. It's easy. Might be a playoff team. Watch out. I'll take the higher on the Bears. I'll put my money where my mouth is, too. I like them right here. This is going to be a good year for them. It's going to get that engine moving in the right direction. Maybe not at the Packers level just yet, but moving in the right direction for the Bears, so higher than 6.5 wins. Last one for the NFL here, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, 11.5 wins.
I'm going to go lower. I think it's a tough number. Now, I mean, you know, the division, they are like, you know, Green Bay, they have a very favorable division. It's funny because when Brady retired, that division was open for business. Brady comes back, it's like, nah, Bucks got it.
Yeah.
Yeah, look, I mean, they win 11 games, and I'm correct. They're a good team. I think they could easily win 11 or more. I just think, you know, other teams have started to catch up to them a bit, and, you know, I'm going to say lower.
Yeah, 12-win seasons are tough. Even now that we're playing, 17 games, it's going to be tough, but hey, let's not doubt Brady because he could do anything. We never know what's going to happen with him. They'll definitely have that division, but if they get up big in that division, do they maybe rest Brady? Do they think, hey, you know what? We really want him for the playoffs. That was the problem last year. You know, we don't want him to get hurt. Who knows? You know, could they be 12-5 this season? I don't know. That'd be tough. So I'm going to go lower on this one and think like you. Maybe it's that 10 or 11 range for them.
Yeah, I want to see with them how they manage without Chris Godwin to start the year. You know, if he's not ready from his ACL, it's a significant piece of the offense.
They're going to be a very interesting team this year, those Bucks.
Yes.
Now, each week, Mike and I will give you our best bet of the week to help you make some cash. Last week, I had the Warriors in game one, but it lost. But let's not forget, I gave out a ton of winners last week, if you were listening carefully. I had the Rangers in game seven. I had the Avs and Oilers over 7 goals in game one. And I kind of told you to bet on Rafael Nadal at the French Open. So I'll take a 3-1 week. You're making money on that. I love it. But Mike, I'm a gentleman, and you have the tea.
Thank you. Can't lose what, you know, I don't know what I was saying there. I had the tea. I was away. Thank you for giving it back. CFL kicks off this week. You know, we didn't have any room to fit it in, but I'm going the kickoff game of the season, Thursday, June 9th, the Montreal Alouettes at the Calgary Stampeders. Bo Levi Mitchell is back for the Stamps after battling shoulder injury last year. I think Calgary's going to have a good season. 3.5 is a spread. I like the Stamps to cover that at home. Stampeders -3.5.
Ooh, I love it. Get those CFL picks in. Now, with the RBC Canadian Open at St. George's, as we mentioned, it's going to be a tough field. Who might dominate this course? There's a chance we might have a lot of rain this week, and therefore, it's going to be real soft. These players might get to like minus 20. So don't be surprised when you see those leaderboards on Sunday. However, there are 5 par threes, all of them over 200 yards. Yes, these guys can stick it nice and close, but you're not going to see the ball roll when you're hitting a 6-iron, 200 yards, 200 plus yards into the green. Therefore, my lock is no hole in ones this week at the Canadian Open. Right now, you can get it at plus 110, and that's my lock of the week.
What can't you bet on?
There won't be any hole-in-ones for me or Mike either this weekend.
No, I can almost guarantee that.
Now, we want to hear from you. Make sure to comment on the pod wherever you download your podcast and let us know your thoughts on Twitter and Instagram. We would love the feedback. Check us out on Instagram and Twitter at JABOPod, thestringer.ca, and find Mike and I on Twitter to see our thoughts on all the sports throughout the week. Please subscribe, like, and rate our show, and do us a favor and tell a friend to listen. And as always, clear eyes,
full hearts,
can't lose.
Oh, yeah.